What led you to become interested in writing this book?
So I became interested in writing the book for a lot of reasons. But when, because I used to be a professional actress and then I changed and trained as a voice teacher. And when I had my first teaching practice, my very first day of teaching practice in a very famous drama school in London, I'd planned all my voice class and everything, and I had all my text all ready, all the exercises I'd carefully worked out. And there was one student who was very dyslexic, and he couldn't do the reading of the text, and it completely ruined my exercise that I'd so carefully planned, you know, as a new teacher. And he was, I could see that he was obviously incredibly stressed, embarrassed within the class, you know, because obviously in voice and acting, it's the common practice that you read aloud. And I could, and I was, as the teacher, I was trying to think of ideas to help him, and everything I suggested couldn't help him. I went back to the course leader at the time, because I was still training as a voice teacher, and I asked him about it. And he had no suggestions. The only suggestion he had was, he said, well, you could have asked another student maybe to read his lines for him. And I thought, well, that wouldn't be very satisfactory, because that would sort of draw even more attention to him that he couldn't join in the exercise in the same way that everyone else could. And so I then started working professionally as a voice teacher in London, and everywhere I taught, I came upon, without fail, there were dyslexic students in my classes, and without fail, they were highly stressed, and they were dismissed by other teachers. You know, they'd go, oh, they're so weak. Oh, why are they here? They're useless. All those excuses of that dyslexia business. And I was, at that time, I sort of thought the same, you know, and because it's inconvenient, because in actor training, a lot of the teaching methods are repetition of practitioners' methods that have been done for years and years, you know, and it's sort of, that's how those things are taught. And if the students can't fit in with the teacher's practice, it's the students that are wrong or weak rather than the teacher, you know. And so I went, I was teaching sight reading skills, and I used to try and think of everything I could to help the dyslexic students, but nothing seemed to be able to help them. And it wasn't until I started teaching at the Arts University, where I teach now, that I had three very remarkable students. And one was a Welsh boy called Ivion, and if when reading aloud in class, he used to trip over all the words, you know, and couldn't read it and couldn't understand what he was reading. But he could write the most marvelous poetry. And when I got on to teaching the international phonetic symbols that they have to learn for accent study, he learnt them immediately, and he could write. He used to sit in classes and take notes all in phonetics. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. He was sort of like a genius at phonetics. And I said, Ivian, how are you so good at phonetics when you struggle to read? I don't understand. And he said, well, to me, the phonetic symbols are pictures. And because the phonetic symbols immediately are linked to the sounds of the words, unlike the alphabet, he could immediately see them as pictures and then link them to the sound. And then he was sort of marvelous at writing in phonetics. And again, it was that incredible thing about dyslexics, in that he couldn't read, yet he could write this remarkable poetry. And he used to write it in sort of Shakespeare sonnet style as well.
Wow.
So he was sort of exceptional in that way. Then in the same year, I had a boy called Tom, who, when we asked him to read anything, I think, oh my goodness, you know, it was slow, plodding, the whole class slowed down. I think, what on earth can I do with him? And then I began to see he was the most marvelous actor, absolutely exceptional. But then when we got onto Shakespeare and difficult text, his speech changed and it became sort of blurred in his pronunciation. And I couldn't work it out, because in life when he spoke, he was perfectly clear. But when he was acting in the difficult Shakespearean text, his words were slurred. So I thought that was very strange, but at the same time, he was the most marvelous actor. And then I had David, who I've written about in the book that you've probably seen, who, again, when reading in class, you just think, oh, I thought he was so weak, you know. I thought, why on earth is he here? And then they had to perform a sonnet. You've probably seen it in the book. And I couldn't believe what I was watching, where he'd created this marvelous performance with all these signs that he'd placed all over the stage. And the signs were written with the words of the sonnet and customized in different designs. And as he spoke the sonnet, he'd run to pick up the particular sign that matched with the words. And he'd also worked out all these fabulous physical actions that completely showed the audience the meaning of the words. And I have never seen anybody perform in that style. It was a completely original style. His work was exceptional. He was by far, so he'd sort of gone from being the worst in the year to like the leading actor. Mm. And it was, I realized that these signs were something to do with his dyslexia, but I was also so moved and astonished because he had been dismissed as very weak and a sort of failing student. And yet when he devised his own way of working, he was incredibly strong. And so it was, in the end, it was David that I thought, I've got to do a PhD on this. Because when I went to look for any literature or publications or advice anywhere to help with dyslexic acting students, there was literally nothing. No books, no one knew anything, no one had any advice. And so I was the first to start with the PhD. But it was really because I was so intrigued, because you could often know in advance, you'd think, I bet they're dyslexic, because there'd be something about them that made them stand out or made them very original, or, you know, they were just different, but also often very, very strong. Mm. And so I was so inspired and intrigued and also puzzled and also so worried for them, because I could see within the usual setup of teaching in drama schools and actor training, they were usually the students that got the lowest marks or were failed the unit or were dismissed as very untalented and weak. And I could see that they had huge strengths that weren't being noticed. And so I had to write the book, because obviously I did a PhD on it and there was nothing out there. So it's very important that the book was written to change the culture, I hope, because as you know, my book's only just come out, but to create awareness, to give a voice to the dyslexic students, because they are invisible. You know, there is nowhere that their experience or thoughts are recorded anywhere. To change the culture of that, you know, it's teacher-led teaching, where if you don't fit in with the teacher, you're weak, but that the teacher has to respond and really look to the student, and it becomes individual-led, and that teachers start to learn something about dyslexia and actually do a bit of research and learn about dyslexia so that they can understand the students rather than just dismissing them and failing them. So that's really in a nutshell.
That's fantastic.
Why I wrote the book.
Yeah,
sorry, Bennett.
No, I think that's wonderful. That's a wonderful introduction to your work and also the book, because what struck me, there are a lot of PhD projects and theses that don't have as much practical relevance and actually will have help for so many people. Can you give us an idea, because I think this is a fantastic book. Give us an idea of what the big picture of the book is and a little bit about some of the strategies that you share in it.
Yeah, the big picture of the book, I think, first of all, the student comes first, the individual, the dyslexic individual, and of course, As I highlight in the book, there's no such thing as sort of a typical dyslexic. It's incredibly complicated and complex, and all the dyslexics are all often very different, although there's often links between them. But as I said, because there's nothing out there that foregrounds the dyslexic student, the big picture is about platforming their abilities, their experience, their voices, so they become visible and showcasing their talents, because they often have these unusual and very powerful talents. And so it's bringing that to the fore for people to read about and to start to recognize and understand. And also it's about using differing methods of accessing the text that are not simply stand up and read it aloud, which is the usual thing in acting classes and voice classes, with everybody watching them and judging them. So it's about finding ways of bypassing, which for the dyslexic, which is the most horrific thing, which is looking at that page and trying to read it and understand it. So it's about introducing different practical methods that can bypass that, so that you're creating a more level playing field across the whole cohort of students, so that every learning style or every different modalities or approaches to teaching or accessing the text are given full support, especially visual and kinesthetic processing modalities and embodied cognition, which is how it seems that many of the dyslexic students, they seem to lead with the visual, with the kinesthetic backing it up, and thinking through the body and creating that external concrete text. It's a parallel text, which is away from the dreaded alphabetic letters on the page.
Can you walk us through, like, even a simple example, whether it's a phrase from a play or something like that, how that could be? Because a lot of the community has heard things like multisensory, kinesthetic, even the idea of embodied cognition. But can you walk us through, like, an example where one of your actors or actresses used to actually access the text and be able to actually enact it?
Yes. Well, again, going back to David, who was my inspiration, him creating the written signs that he'd made very visual by drawing and on the text, which is a common thing amongst my dyslexic students, where they draw on the text, and also the physicalization. So a very simple one in the book, obviously it's far more complicated than I've got time to explain now, mm-hmm. but I drew, because some other dyslexic students, when working alone, they create a physical storyboard of the text. So they create physical actions that represent the meaning of the words to imprint it on their memory. So I devised a way of introducing a Shakespeare sonnet to them, where instead of just saying, open the book, there, read it, page 57 or whatever, that I work simply through the ears, so that I give them large pads of paper and colouring pens, and I first of all introduce key words. They haven't seen the text. I introduced key words of the text to them and asked them to draw it on the page, draw a response to it. It doesn't have to be a literal drawing. It can be an expressive, emotional drawing, but they draw a response to the key words at the same time as speaking them aloud, so they get a phonological imprint of it, and then they write it next to the picture. And so we work through the whole sonnet on the key words and drawing the key words and writing them and speaking them aloud, and then key phrases from the sonnet. So starting again back at the beginning, and so almost the whole line they create a drawing of on the page as they write it and they speak it aloud. And then the next thing, I ask them to actually physicalize it. So I go back to the key phrases, they speak the key phrases aloud, and they physicalize it or give a gesture to it within the space. And then I introduce the text to them, so they see it for the first time, but they only have to read four lines aloud, and then we discuss the meaning together. And so they work through the whole thing just in baby bits, four lines discuss meaning, four lines discuss meaning. And then, having worked through the printed text like that, we then go back to their drawings, and I ask them to tell me the story of their drawings, talk me through the drawings, So therefore, they then get the pictorial representation of the meaning of the sonnet through the pictures. And at that stage, they can change the pictures or develop them more or relate them to their physical actions. And then finally, we go back to now read the whole sonnet and give it some performance. And because they've drawn it, because they've heard it, they've spoken the words in baby sections, baby sort of steps, that they have now found an attachment and an understanding to it. And so it's no longer really terrifying to them. And they can actually speak the words with clarity and also have an emotional response to it, which is what an actor, that's why it's extra hard for an actor, because an actor doesn't have to just read a text aloud with clarity of word. They also have to find a personal expression of it, you know, in their acting. Or bring some emotion to it. So there's lots of sort of dual tasking that they have to do. So that's a very short way of explaining a particular exercise that I've devised, which is directly drawing and using the dyslexics method. So my work is all created from them. I haven't imprinted, you know, sometimes people think of an idea and think, well, maybe that will work. And then they tell the dyslexic students to do it. And then they can't do it very well. But everything that I do has come from the students in the first place. So they actually find that exercise very supportive and quite exciting to do. And it's an amazing change that happens to the final outcome of their work and their ability to show their real strengths, just in that you could say it's a simplistic exercise, but it's sort of related to art therapy or drama therapy. You know, when you might say, would you like to draw how you're feeling? So that you start to work, draw out the subconscious, finding that attachment to the words and to the text.
Fantastic.
A way of missing out, in another chapter I wrote about, I discovered he's an American educator. I've forgotten his first name, Esley, and he writes about drawing the text, and he calls it to get rid of the awful banging into the text. And I like that metaphor very much, because dyslexic students often do sort of bang into the text, crash into it, you know. And by working that way, through working through the ears and working through pictures and physicalization before they actually even see the written word, you're sort of missing out that banging into the text.
Wonderful.